Good morning. We are never lone heroes, and we are never called to be martyrs. And yet somehow this is how we have been taught to remember Brother Martin. We think that we should not see color. Meanwhile, my darkness sheds light into a world where bias flies from government-issued guns into heads or out of the muscles of arms around necks, from folks so afraid that they are shooting bullets into their own reflections. We are all connected. Black, brown, and white bodies and bodies existing outside the lines of rich, white, Christian, or heterosexual identity, we must know that we are never lone heroes. We must not let Brother Martin be a spoon-fed farce of independent change maker. There is power beyond complacency and the lie that we can never do the real thing or that things like justice just take time. There is power beyond believing that we can never heal or dismantle or transform what destroys and maims and makes others less than. There is power beyond your need for a hero. You are the platform. But we are afraid of ourselves and afraid of one another. Fear and self-hatred built and perpetuate the systemic injustice that we claim we do not want to be a part of, but we are, we are, we are. Do not romanticize the gains of the 60s, hiding your power from yourselves and believing that if you aren't getting arrested, then you're not doing enough, when in reality, you looking into your own mirror is the most gut-wrenching, truthful revolution, and we don't do it enough. It is time for us to face ourselves and stop pointing our fingers. We are never lone heroes. There was Coretta Scott King and Bayard Rustin and so many working and working and working and threatened and ignored and silenced and assassinated, and it was not beautiful. There is the work of James Baldwin, Audre Lorde, Malcolm X, Angela Davis, Assata Shakur, and Huey Newton. The struggle for justice was and is not beautiful, not quick, not easy, and they were never lone heroes. The struggle for justice is imperfect and necessary, just as we are imperfect and necessary. It is public and hidden, just as our shadows are public and hidden. It is remembered and misrepresented, just as today we remember and misrepresent. Brother Martin went to Washington for reparations. Brother Martin was abandoned by fellow freedom fighters for standing against the Vietnam War. Brother Martin, who this country called a traitor, a danger, and a threat. Brother Martin, whose family sacrificed a father. Brother Martin, who suffered from depression. And Brother Martin, whom this nation killed and ironically celebrates to soothe our own nightmares. This nation's guilt, its white fragility, and our collective addiction to the ideology of white supremacy. The struggle is not beautiful. And even today, as we march and stand and speak and do, many of us are not looking within, yet we are hungry to lead, hungry to be seen, hungry to be right, and hungry to be good. And when what this world truly needs is for you to see how you have lived in a country that lies about its founders, creating a dissonance so deep that even when the most oppressed among you cry out, "This does not help me," you do the thing anyway. We are not lone heroes. We do not hold the answers ourselves. This movement needs a mirror. We all need mirrors. We are not lone heroes. Together, there is a power within each of us. There is something deeply buried, and once discovered, it shines the light of the Divine Mother upon us all. Our ancestors always present. We are not lone heroes. We are not lone heroes. So today and tomorrow and the day afterwards, when you seek to dismantle the institution you despise the most, ask yourself, where is it hiding and living inside of me? This is our work.
This is our work. Speaking Down Barriers seeks to help us all understand that the differences that so often separate us and are portrayed as weaknesses, differences of religion, sexuality, identity, gender, class, race and ethnicity, national origin, that these differences do not have to be a point of division. They can be a point of connection and strength. And we do this through facilitated dialogue and presentation, spoken word performance, writing, speaking, and training. Here in Greenville, we have worked for some time with a small cohort of clergy across a large denominational and creedal spectrum. Pat Jobe has been an important part of this group, a key animator of it. Maria has been the great spirit pushing the group forward. Michelle McClendon is a part of that group as well. And that cohort meets across all of our differences of belief, all of our differences of social and political and theological ideology, to talk about how we can engage this community and improve it, how we can make it a stronger place where all difference is welcome, where all people can thrive. One member of that cohort is a man named Jonathan Parker. Jonathan serves at Fellowship Greenville. He is their community outreach minister. And in the course of our conversations, Jonathan spoke some about his background and about his time at Bob Jones University as a student. We drove past Bob Jones on the way here this morning. I always feel so much fear and anger every time I pass that place. Just the name Bob Jones is difficult for me to hear. Jonathan was a student there, but he left under very bad circumstances. Left because of disagreement with professors and administrators. And it was a very painful, unwilling departure. When Jonathan speaks about that parting, it is all the things that should not be. And as he told the story of this, we recognize in Jonathan a great gift to speak. His work doesn't often afford him that opportunity to teach and to speak, and yet he has an incredible gift. And we began to encourage him to utilize that gift whenever he had the opportunity. Our work is not just about confronting the ills of our world, although it is certainly that. We also call out in all of us the deep gift that we carry, every one of us, that deep power inside of us, that when we release it, it changes everything. The light hidden in our own darkness. And when we emerge it, it changes the darkness of the world. Jonathan has a gift to speak, and we urged him, whenever you have the opportunity, speak. And so one day this fall, he received a phone call asking him to speak at a pastor's appreciation event at a local athletic venue. The premise of these things is to get pastors in so that they will then bring their youth groups en masse, buy blocks of tickets to attend sporting events. It's total commercialism. And Jonathan was invited to speak there. He didn't want to go. It didn't make sense to him. And yet he felt compelled. And there we were encouraging him, whenever you have the chance, speak, use that gift. And so unsure of why he was going, he prepared to talk about the Greenville community. And from his religious view, what the message of the Spirit of Love, as he would say it, what the gospel message is for transforming our world. And he walked into this venue, unclear of why he was there and what he was to do. And it was full of folks from Bob Jones. And all he wanted to do was run. But Jonathan has this gift. And through his fear, he stayed. And he decided, this is the one opportunity I have to share what I believe. I'm going to do it. And that'll be it. And he did. He spoke about racism. He spoke about poverty. He spoke about pain and separation and the world that we have built and the ideologies that reinforce it and perpetuate it. He spoke about these things and his conviction that that is not what the deepest spirit in the world, not what God would want. Speaking from his view, this deep truth of our life together. And when it was over, folks from Bob Jones came to him and they said, we need to learn more from you. Over the course of the fall, Jonathan met with a small team from Bob Jones 4 times, meetings lasting 4 and 5 hours each. He took them through Greenville, shared with them places in great pain, and shared with them the importance of confronting how we ourselves are part of this world. No matter who we are and what we believe, no matter how right we may believe we are, and many of us believe that we are right, we must examine ourselves and our place in this world and our connection to it if we are ever going to make it the place that it is meant to be. Every time Jonathan met with these folks, he figured it was his last time. And so he spoke the truth. Always in love, but he spoke it. He spoke the truth through his fear in love. And then they called him. And they said, Jonathan, for the first time in our school's history, we will celebrate Martin Luther King Jr. Day. And we need your help. We don't know what to do. Understand this is a place where the name Martin Luther King Jr. was for the majority of its history not only not welcome, but condemned. And that when the school made this decision, it began to suffer persecution from its own. You can imagine. I need hardly elaborate. But Jonathan began to work with these folks, to draw in others of us who have supported him and thought with him. Tomorrow, through Miracle Hill Rescue Mission and the Phyllis Wheatley Center in Nickeltown, students from Bob Jones University will observe the first Martin Luther King Jr. Day of Service in that school's history. Does this change everything? No. No Martin Luther King Jr. observance does. And this one does not. Does it fix everything? Everything that I might call out in that institution or in our world? No. No one act does. But is it a witness to the power of our gifts? Reaching out to touch another, even the very one we would not want to touch. A witness to call ourselves to rethink the past and our assumptions of the present. Yes, it is. It is a profound and crucial gift to speak the truth in love. See what a remarkable moment of personal risk and of institutional transformation, even just for a moment, that this one act is. And it is born of a person sharing their deep gift, that thing that is deep inside of them, speaking the truth in love, and of another group of people listening and choosing to face themselves, to confront who they are and who they have been, and to do the work of changing how they think and how they live in the world. This is our work. Not only to change the world outside of us, but the world that we have absorbed and that lives inside of us, lest we perpetuate the very thing we mean to change. We speak at many congregations and many churches. We were speaking at another progressive congregation, not at all dissimilar from this one. And we held a dialogue about racism. And as you may guess, everyone there is against racism. We appreciate that. But racism is very deep. It's not only hatred and bigotry. It's not only how we treat each other in the grocery store line. It's not only how we feel about who our sons and daughters date. It is the structure of our country from its beginning. And although over time laws change, the effect of our past does not just go away. How our roads are paved, how our businesses are built, where our schools are and how they're funded, these things were legally instituted under an explicitly racist system, and they have not just gone away. We have hard work to do. And in our estimation, the key to that is to share power. No longer to make choices for other people, but to listen to one another and to speak to one another and to change the world together, because no one of us has all of the answers. And so we shared this with this group, a dialogue about racism. We must share power to transform the way we live together as families and communities, neighborhoods and cities and businesses, and as a political system. We can no longer benevolently make choices for others. We must listen and choose together. And one person who had excelled in the dialogue, a white man who had been a very active and positive participant, blurted out at the end of this beautiful dialogue, "I don't want my janitor to be my CEO." Think about the layers of bias and assumption and privilege in that statement. First of all, about who's even in the room having the dialogue. Because would any of us ever say that if the janitor was there? And second, the deep and explicit assumption about who the janitor is and who the CEO is. This stuff is in us, even when we don't want it to be. It is buried in us. And if we don't face it, it comes out. Just when we don't mean for it to. We're speaking at another congregation. Again, another one much like this one. Progressive place, thoughtful, engaged in the community, broad. Multiple images from sacred traditions around the world, all around us. And again, we were in dialogue. We read poetry, we spoke about Audre Lorde, shared these insights. And another white man said, "We are doing the work of diversity. In my very successful, very large multinational business, our CEO is leading the way, instituting diversity initiatives globally. And we're doing it in this church on LGBTQ rights and on Muslims and refugees and being interfaith. But I am sick and tired of talking about race. We are done with that. It's over. It's time to move on." That's the work of diversity. This is our work. The best of us, the hardest working, the most well-meaning, the bravest and most dedicated. This is our work, not just to face the horrors of the world, but in order to face them. Not just to face what will happen in our country this week, but in order to face it. Not just to point at them over there doing those terrible things, but because we see that so clearly, we must face ourselves and our own place in this. Because we are part of it and we drink it in every day. All of us, of every ethnicity, of every creed, of every gender, of every identity, of every language and origin, of every orientation, of every unanswered question, and of every conviction, hard fast, we must face ourselves and ask, how does this live in me? And then we listen. Listen to the truth spoken in love. Real, hard, brave, generous love. Truth spoken in love by a friend and by our world. And within us, that persistent and irrefutable voice of our conscience saying, what is your place in this? Listen to the truth and transform the oppressor within. It is hard work, and it will change the world. Because it will change you and everything you touch. And you, the fullest you, the deepest you, the gifted you, the very best you, is exactly who we need. This is our work. Thank you.
I'm going to pull on the roots of my minister grandfather, AME background. We're going to do a little call and response. This is on the spot, so Scott did not know this was going to happen to him. I want you to look at your neighbor, find some eyes, look at someone near you, and repeat after me. We are not lone heroes.
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 Do not be afraid.
Do not be afraid.
Do not be afraid.
Do not be afraid.
We have work to do.
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 Together there is a power within each of us, is something deeply buried and once discovered. It shines the light of the Divine Mother upon us all. Our ancestors always present. We are not lone heroes. We are not lone heroes. So today and tomorrow and the day afterwards, when you seek to dismantle the institution you despise the most, ask yourself, where is it hiding and living inside of me? This is our work. Thank you.